You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Andrew Brandt, Sports Illustrated columnist, and he's a former Packer executive. He was there for Favre. He was there with Aaron Rodgers' draft. Let me start with that, Andrew. If I said right now, start a franchise, and you have to give him a 7-year contract, Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen.
Not where I thought we were going. Morning, Dan.
Morning.
I'm going to go with the new kid on the block, Justin Herbert.
Do you mean that if you're on the clock right now and all three are available, and this has nothing to do with your roster, just that quarterback, you're taking, you know what Mahomes is. You sort of know what Allen and Herbert are, the smaller sample size. And you're going to invest in Herbert or Josh Allen before Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you just mentioned Favre and Rodgers. I'm a strong believer that quarterback is an arm position. Now, all those guys have cannons. All they do. I'm just thinking this guy's got the biggest cannon because you can coach all the other stuff. You can't coach arm strength at a high level. And again, tiny sample size. Of the three big arms there, I'm thinking Herbert may have the biggest arm. That's where I'm going.
Well, I think Josh Allen has the biggest arm, but keep in mind, these three guys all had big question marks coming in. We didn't even think that Justin Herbert was going to play, that he was going to sit. Josh Allen had no real success going into the NFL. I mean, he played at Wyoming. And then Patrick Mahomes, we thought he was sort of a Brett Favre wannabe. And then here they are, you know, maybe the top three quarterbacks.
You know, Dan, you just said something there. No one sits, right? No one sits. We had Aaron Rodgers sit 3 years. That will go down to me as the longest sitting of a first-round quarterback ever. That's why I think Jordan Love will be the quarterback there next year. But listen, Mahomes sat a while, but no one sits. I mean, you say Justin Herbert. I know with the injection of Tyrod Taylor, but he wasn't going to sit. And all five rookie quarterbacks are playing right now. No one sits anymore.
Yeah, but they should. Like, I don't think Trey Lance is ready to play.
But they don't.
I mean, I know.
You know, this Garoppolo and Andy Dalton, and I'm like, and I admit it. I'm like, why? You're like, what are you gaining by having those guys play? Now, I know the guy's going to be raw and rookie and make mistakes and Fields and Lance, but they're going to make mistakes whether they start now in November, December, or 2022.
All right, let me get to the topic I wanted to talk to you about, because you've been on fire on Twitter. So Andrew Brandt, Sports Illustrated columnist, host of Business of Sports podcast, former Packers executive, and director of Villanova's Sports Law and Business Program. You said in a tweet that Gruden was sacrificed for the greater good, and in parentheses put NFL owners in there. Who sacrificed him and why?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. Let me explain. I just don't get this. For people who haven't been following this closely, this is an inquiry into the Washington Football Club toxic workplace, sexual harassment by a law firm hired to do this. Yet, a ESPN broadcaster from emails 10 years ago is the emails that we see. That's the information that comes out of this. Can't debate the emails. Obviously repugnant, reviled, gone. Consequences. Yeah. Right. But why this? And why not others? And why not more? Someone somewhere wanted this out, wanted Gruden gone, maybe wanted Demaurice Smith saved last week, whatever the reasons. I don't know what the greater interests are here. But to me, this is a sacrifice for something else not coming out, for diversion to this story rather than other stories like this continuing toxic workplace story in Washington. I don't know, Dan. Listen, last week, Demaurice Smith is having a vote on his reelection the day emails come out, which are very damaging to him, or which are very offensive to him. This week, Gruden continues to coach during the weekend and more drip, drip, drip of emails, and he's out. What's going on here? And I guess my question is, will the drip, drip, drip continue beyond John Gruden?
Okay, if I'm the commissioner and this was leaked under my watch, and I don't know how many people had access to these emails, but these are, I believe, senior executives who look through, comb through these emails. It doesn't take me long to call roll to say, let's come in here, because we had somebody who leaked this information. Does Roger Goodell care that somebody leaked this information?
I think he has to. You know, any leader is going to worry about loose lips sinking ships.
He hasn't said anything publicly.
Yeah, I think that's what we need. All we've had is a statement from their PR guy saying we didn't leak it. Now, this is going to have to be addressed. This is going to have to be addressed. Because at some point, he's got to address what's coming out of Washington, right? And yes, I think we need statements here beyond, you know, Gruden screwed up. So that's why I use this word sacrifice. And I don't mean to be dramatic with it. I just don't get this. There's more to this story. And be careful what you wish for, I guess, to whoever's leaking it. But here's a question, Dan. Answer me this. I know we've asked questions. What if emails surface from an owner?
Oh, I know.
Making misogynistic, racist comments. Are we firing the owner? Are we firing the owner? Because we just fired Gruden.
Well, I think that that's what's involved here. I think you have, why wouldn't there be correspondence between owners? You know, Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder are best friends. I think that there was a coup that they were trying to get rid of Roger Goodell a couple of years ago. Do I think that they corresponded in email, perhaps, to say things about Roger Goodell? I mean, it almost feels like Roger Goodell's protecting the owners from the owners.
Yeah, listen, for people who don't know, and I think everyone knows by now, Roger Goodell is paid and hired by the owners. This idea of this player's commissioner, and I know we have some of that with the NBA, but no, they're his constituents. He's there to serve them. And he's done a great job on the business. Business is booming. It's better than ever right now. The NFL has multi-year deals both with labor and with media. They're set. So for whatever reason, they wanted these emails out about Gruden. And they were sent to the Washington Club with Bruce Allen. That's what's so weird here. We don't see responses back from Allen. We don't see anything else from Washington going that way to Gruden. Lot to ask.
But legally.
Yeah.
Can anybody file anything that brings out these emails that makes them public?
Yeah, it's funny because we got something going on in St. Louis litigation where they filed discovery requests for that. This is not a lawsuit. That's the difference. You know, this is an investigation which is done by a Washington, D.C. law firm, which seems to be taken over surreptitiously, I think, by the league. So that seems hardly independent.
And also, did John Gruden have his agent present when he decided to step down? And is there a payoff here? Did he get paid for the rest of this? Like, I don't know. Yeah. It just seems like Mark Davis shows up and says, John, you got to step down. You know, you can't be a distraction. And then what?
I don't think for a minute he's leaving behind. He's leaving with zero. Okay. So I think there have been a lot of negotiations, which may still be ongoing. Say he has, pick a number, 50, 60 million left on that deal. Believe you me, Dan, he's not walking away with zero. So listen, he could be a thorn in the NFL side here. He could be. He says, well, here's what I got back, or here's what I know. And I think he's being paid off as part of a settlement, and part of it's going to be an NDA. No disparaging comments, nothing else coming out of this. He's not getting 50, 60 million, believe me. But he's not walking away with nothing. So it's some number where his agent, I think it's still Bob Lamont, who I dealt with for years. There's this whole Andy Reid tree, includes Gruden. Mike Holmgren tree, sorry, that includes Reid and Gruden, where all these coaches have Bob Lamont and lawyers working for them.
Does this get worse in the coming weeks? Are we done with it?
The NFL hopes not. I mean, hopes that this is the end. But listen, I think you, I think me, I think everyone in national media would like to know more. Obviously, fans and the public. But this is, I guess my, I talk about sacrifice. Did the NFL, whoever leaked this, really think we'd sort of brush it off and say, let's go on to the next topic? I think the NFL thinks that.
I think they're whoever hoping that. Yeah. I think they're hoping that.
I think we, transparency breeds trust. I get emails from people like, they're like the mafia. Well, the mafia has secrets. When you have secrets, you're going to get those kind of comments.
Great to touch base with you. Keep stirring it up on Twitter, Andrew. Thanks for joining us as always.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Talk soon.
That's Andrew Brandt, Sports Illustrated columnist and host of Business as Sports podcast, a former Packers executive and director of Villanova Sports Law and Business Program. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Frank Isola, the Nets studio host on Yes, and of course he is a contributor to Around the Horn, Pardon the Interruption, and SiriusXM NBA Radio, the starting lineup host here. All right, where do we go now? Recap the past week, and where are we going with the season starting in, what, a week or so?
Well, if you think about it, Dan, so the Nets found out that he's allowed to practice, that Kyrie was going to be allowed to practice at their training facility. I really think that that was a way the Nets found a loophole, because I think they wanted him to show up for work and practice. But clearly something happened between Saturday, Sunday, and Monday when they went to Philadelphia. He was not with the team. The team did not play well in Philadelphia. And then by 11 o'clock yesterday morning, Dan, the statement comes out that Kyrie Irving is not going to be with the team until he meets the requirement in terms of getting the vaccination or if the mandate changes. So there must have been a lot of talk on that bus ride down to Philly, because they left Sunday from Brooklyn, returned Monday night after a terrible performance. I think that's the time frame, which is pretty interesting. A lot of conversations clearly took place.
Okay. Explain the policy, the rule here. Is team rule, city rule, NBA rule?
Yeah, it's a city rule. And it applies to San Francisco. I think now it applies to L.A. and applies to New York City and, of course, Brooklyn, where you have to be vaccinated if you're playing, you know, in a large setting like that. So it does not impact anybody on the Knicks. Every player on the Knicks has been vaccinated. It does not impact any player on the Nets other than Kyrie Irving, because he hasn't been able to play in the home games. We know that that Kevin Durant, James Harden vaccinated because they've played already at Barclays Center. Sean Marks was asked directly yesterday, whether or not, can you just say officially whether Kyrie Irving is vaccinated? He said, we wouldn't be in this position right now if he were. Here's the one caveat, though. Visiting players don't have to be vaccinated as a visiting player to go to those places. So Kyrie Irving, in theory, I think it's the 41 home games plus the two games in New York City, because, you know, New York, New Jersey resident, and then he'd be available for 39 games. But the Nets have said, no. We don't want a part-time player. We only want a full-time player.
But what about Toronto? Toronto's got some guidelines. Can he get into Toronto to play?
Yeah, yes. That's the one place he can play. And remember, too, okay, what the NBA is going to do for players, Dan, that aren't vaccinated, you're going to have to get multiple tests during the day. You're going to have to, social distancing, everything like that. They're going to make it very difficult for the players that aren't vaccinated to kind of be part of the group and part of their teams.
What kind of trade market, what kind of trade value does Kyrie have?
I don't know if there's much. No one is questioning his talent. We all see what he can do. You go back to 2016, the 41 points in game 5 against the Warriors, the biggest shot in the history of that franchise when he beat the Warriors with the Cavaliers. But really with Kyrie, Dan, it's a lot of drama. It's a lot of headaches, and it's not enough basketball. His first year in Brooklyn, and there are a number of reasons. He gets hurt a lot, 20 games. Last year, 54. They have played in 3 playoff series. He's really only been available for one. And remember, Kevin Durant left. Think about it. He left the Warriors. He left Steph Curry. He left one of the best teams in the history of the sport to come to Brooklyn to play with Kyrie. Kyrie's not available, but Kevin Durant is out there playing, as is James Harden.
Yeah, it's just, I can't imagine what Kevin Durant is thinking right now, because, you know, he's got this opportunity, thought that they had created something, and the overwhelming favorites. He wants to win these championships to be included in the conversation with LeBron and some of the all-time greats. And meanwhile, you have this. Like Kevin Durant can't convince Kyrie, or James Harden can't convince him. That surprises me.
And I would have to think, you know, the net owner, Joe Tsai, Sean Marks, the general manager, Steve Nash, had a lot of say in what happened. But I find it hard to believe that they don't run this by guys like Kevin Durant, James Harden, even Blake Griffin, who's a respected voice in that locker room. I would have to think that if Kevin Durant is sitting there saying, absolutely not, do not do this. This is a joke. I'm going to be so upset if you tell Kyrie he can't play. I don't think they'd do it. Kevin Durant has to be involved in this decision. And you mentioned, you know, the one thing about Kevin Durant, go back to last year. Here's a guy that missed over 530 days because of the Achilles injury. He has the very good playoff. He's basically on his own, but he was outstanding, especially in the two games in Brooklyn. What did he do a month later? He went to Vegas to play in the Olympics. Dan, this is a guy that has already won two gold medals. Mm-hmm. He's accomplished everything there is to accomplish. That's how much he loves playing. Think about Ben Simmons, who plays for the Australian national team. He has an awful playoff. He says, I'm not going to the Olympics. And now you have the situation with Kyrie. Kevin Durant loves to play basketball. Sometimes you wonder about the commitment of certain players, and I think Kyrie and Ben Simmons fall into that category.
Yeah, I brought up this yesterday about Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons has been entitled. He has been told he's great, whereas Giannis comes over and nobody knew anything about him, and he has continued to work hard to be great. And I love that. He's one of my favorite players because
I agree.
Like there's just something about him that he has that attitude of I'm not satisfied. Ben, it feels like, got to the NBA and was like, all right, I'm here. Hello. Like, you know, in the words of Tiger Woods, hello, world. And, you know, world went back and go, who cares? And then now, hey, would you trade those two for one another? Well, if I'm the Nets, I'll take Ben Simmons.
I would.
You want to take Kyrie? Go ahead, take Kyrie. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. And, you know, the one thing about Ben Simmons, too, has he really worked enough on his game? You know, you and I were at those finals games with Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq wasn't always a great free throw shooter, but he was not afraid to get fouled, draw contact, and go to the line. And that's what you love about Giannis. You know, everyone is counting out his, you know, how long it's taking him to take a free throw. He's shooting air balls. He's still drawing contact. And then in the biggest game of his life, he goes 17 of 19 from the free throw line. Yeah. And that's the issue. So Ben Simmons, once all this is sorted out with the Sixers, it's still going to come down to, can a team put you on the floor in the fourth quarter? Are you working enough at your game? I don't need you to shoot a three-point. I think the whole three-point shot thing is overrated. You have to be able to make free throws. That's something you have to work on, whether you need a sports psychologist or you just need to get in the gym and work on your free throws. That's on you.
Yeah, I'd be satisfied with a 15 to 18 foot jumper as well. You don't have to be at the 3-point. Like everybody thinks that's what you have to be able to shoot the three. Kevin Durant has made a Hall of Fame career on shooting the 18 footer. Mid-range jumper. DeMar DeRozan. There's nothing wrong with a mid-range jumper, but you got to make your free throws. We're talking to Frank Isola, the Nets studio host on Yes. I was just mentioning that, you know, we want to have a grade to give to the Lakers after two preseason games. And I went, oh, my God. The Miami Heat, when LeBron joined him, you know, they were a mess for the first half of the year. And those were Hall of, you know, in their prime. This team right now, I don't know when you think you could get a good handle on how good the Lakers are going to be this season. How far in the season?
I think it's going to take a while. I also think, you know, the one thing about Miami, LeBron had gone there, hadn't won a championship yet. He has won a title in L.A. with Anthony Davis, so we know that they can get it done. I'd be worried about, you know, Trevor Ariza is going to be 2 months now. Talen Horton-Tucker, he's going to be about 2 months with the thumb surgery that he has had. You know, so already injuries are catching up to them, and it's really not Carmelo. It's not LeBron. It's not Russell Westbrook. It's not Anthony Davis. So you know that those problems are going to come up at some point during the season. They're still the best team in the West, but as we learned last year, the team that finished with the best record in the West was Utah. The team that went to the finals was Phoenix. So those are two quality teams. The Warriors are going to be much better later on in the season when Klay is back to being Klay Thompson. But I still think, you know, if LeBron is healthy, you know, good luck trying to beat the Lakers. I think it's going to be tough.
I'm on the Warriors bandwagon, but I was on there last year, and then it went. So I thought Steph was going to be MVP, and I thought they were a sneaky pick. I still like the Warriors. I'm going to go kicking and screaming here because I just think when they play, and you got some youth there as well with Draymond and Klay and Steph. What do you think of the Golden State Warriors as a dark horse?
You know, we went out there. I was out there 2 weeks ago and spent some time with them. And they did point out it's pretty unique. You usually don't have a contending team that has a solid veteran core like that. And then most of the other guys are young players. Now, some of those young guys are good. A guy like Jordan Poole, obviously, and they're waiting for James Wiseman to come around. I still wonder if there could be a trade in their future. I would think that they would try to get involved with Ben Simmons. I think that he could help them. A guy running the court, he can defend. He could basically play center for them. But I think a lot will depend on Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is driven to get back to becoming the player he once was. I think Kevin Durant is a great model for him because Kevin Durant had a similar injury. Those injuries are different now. You know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that basically was going to be the end of your career if you suffered an Achilles injury. But you can come back from it. I think they're highly motivated. They're not as great as they were when they had Kevin Durant, but they're still a really good team. And the West really doesn't have that dominant team. So why couldn't it be them? I think Vegas has them at about 48 wins. I think the Lakers are at about 53 over under.
Great to catch up with you again, Frank. Thank you. I'm sure that we'll talk to you again because this story with Kyrie is not going to go. He might go away. I don't know if the story goes away.
Good seeing you. You look great, Dan.
Thank you, bud.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup. Starts fantasy football players rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tim Kirkchian, ESPN baseball reporter. Tim, how do I look today?
You look better than I do. Aaron Boone told me not long ago that I look like Dr. Fauci. He's 80. You look like Dr. Fauci. He's 80. And then the other day when I was in Boston for the wild card game, I ran into some friends and the wife who I know very well, but I haven't seen her in years. She said, you know, now that Paul Giamatti's lost a lot of weight and you've gotten a lot older, you look like Paul Giamatti. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I don't look like Paul Giamatti. All I know is you look better than I do, and we are of similar age.
Thank you, Tim. I feel a lot better. That's the only reason why I wanted you to come on to say something nice about me. So thank you very much. I mentioned this last hour, and my guys did not. They whiffed on it. They didn't get the answer. I'm going to guess that you'll know this. I have a favorite pitcher. He's still in the playoffs. He's had a lot of success in the playoffs, and he's 37 years of age. Do you want to guess the pitcher that I love? He's a guy that I love watching pitch.
All right. It's Charlie Morton.
Yes, it is. I love Charlie Morton.
Dan, he's better now than he was when he was 27. Yeah. He's better now than he was when he was 31. This is the beauty of baseball. You know this. The light goes on for certain guys. I told you once that Matt Diaz, like 12 years ago in the Braves clubhouse, I mean the Pirates clubhouse in spring training, told me, pointed to Charlie Morton and said, Roy Halladay. And I'm looking at Charlie Morton's numbers and said, he can't be Roy Halladay. And Matt Diaz said, watch, it's going to come for this guy. And it has. And now he's 37 years old. He's got as good a curveball as there is in the major leagues. He throws 98 miles an hour yesterday, 37 on short rest. He, by the way, he's a expert barbecue guy. He can make furniture. He can play the guitar. He can sing. He can do all this stuff, and yet I think he wants to retire, but he's way too good to retire. They keep bringing him back, and he's so good. He says, all right, I'll play for another year because I'm good.
I know. And success in the postseason. It's just, he's one of those guys that you get to the postseason, you see him pitch and you go, I'll be damned. You know, he's on a different team, but he's still very successful.
He's so good, by the way, Dan, with barbecue. Sorry to interrupt. He has a little hitch on the back of his truck where he can take the grill with him wherever he goes. So he's going on. So I said, "Have you ever?" This is when he was with the Rays. I said, "Have you ever taken the grill like to the ballpark?" He said, "No way. You have to start grilling and all that at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm not going to the Trop at 3 o'clock in the morning just to feed my teammates." So he's really good at stuff like that.
I brought up Jose Altuve, who once again had a really good postseason or started out there, and then I was wondering. That let's say they get to the World Series. Let's say they face the Dodgers. The cheating, scandal is going to come up again from 2017. Are the voters going to hold that against Jose Altuve for the Hall of Fame?
I think some will. I've been a voter for 31 years, and I'm not going to hold it against him. He's going to have Hall of Fame numbers for sure. Just go look at where he is in his career now. Look at how many hits he's got. He's got 19 postseason homers. He's stolen bases. He's won gold gloves. He won an MVP. And I understand he was in the middle of something he shouldn't have been in the middle of. But I'm not so naive to think that, yeah, they're the only team that ever tried to steal a sign or cheat or something like that. We've been doing this in baseball for 140 years, and I'm not condoning any of it. But if you're asking me, would I vote for him? If he has the numbers, I will. Do I think some people will say, no, he was part of something he should have been a part of? I'm not voting for him. Yes, I think that will happen to some degree.
Yeah, and I get usually a flood of emails whenever the Astros do well because they're like, see, we don't need to cheat. We're good. And I always say, but why did you cheat in the first place if you didn't need to cheat? Are they a great story this year if they go to the World Series? Yes, that's a great story. It doesn't take away 2017. I still think baseball had physically taken away the World Series trophy. Since you couldn't take away anything else, except for a couple of jobs with manager and GM, would we be satisfied with that as the baseball jury?
I don't think that's a good idea, because if you take it away, Dan, now other teams are going to say, well, what about us? We lost the World Series. I'm just making this up, in 1989, because the whole team we played against was juiced. And then the 51 Dodgers can say, well, the Giants were stealing signs and they beat us in 2 out of 3 and ended up going to the World Series. Why don't we win the National League pennant? I just don't think you can open up that box, because there are too many things in it. Dan, look, for the rest of time, all those guys are going to have that as part of their resume. Some of them are going to have it in the first paragraph of whatever big story is written about them. And they're going to get booed for a long time. Dan, you don't want people in your industry saying, Dan Patrick's a cheater. We don't have any respect for him. That may not be enough punishment. You're not taking away the stats or the money or the trophy. But I sure wouldn't want somebody who I play against all the time saying, I have no respect for you for what you did. That would hurt. That would really hurt me. I know that.
You want the Astros Dodgers?
Well, I think that would be pretty good. But let's just say the Giants, who are supposed to win 74 games this year, were supposed to win fewer games than the Diamondbacks, who lost like 200 games this year, and the Red Sox, who finished last year. Let's say the Red Sox played the Giants in the World Series. I mean, that would be wildly interesting. But yes, I think everyone thinks that LA against Houston would be really cool, a rematch and all that stuff. I'm just a little afraid, Dan. I'm sorry. I'm way too much of a goody two shoes here, that we would get away from how great these players are and these teams are and concentrate more on what happened 4 years ago. And I'm just not sure that's what we should be doing in 2021.
All right, set the scene for Thursday night Dodgers Giants.
Well, the Giants are so good, Dan. And I'm telling you, I've looked for a comparable and I can't find it, of a team that was supposed to win 74 games and didn't add anybody of great significance where you can point to them and say, well, that's the reason they're so much better. The 45 Red Sox won 71 games, and the next year they won 104 and beat the Yankees and went to the World Series. But Ted Williams came back from World War II and hit 342. That's the reason they got so much better. You can't identify that with the Giants, which is what makes their story so fascinating. Now, they have good players. I mean, Buster Posey's a borderline Hall of Famer. Chris Bryant, these guys are good players. But the whole team bought into this team concept. They hit the ball out of the ballpark. They pitch really well. And the scene for tomorrow night is going to be spectacular in that ballpark. Two teams who've never played in the playoffs, but you know, since 1900, playing in a winner-take-all game. And Dan, at the moment, they both have 109 wins, 109, and they're playing a best of five and the deciders tomorrow night. I can't wait.
I just wonder if there's any similarities with the Oral Hershiser Dodgers when they won the World Series, when they didn't have star power. They had Oral, but it wasn't a lineup that was a murderer's row. In fact, you know, didn't Bob Costas famously come out and say something prior to the start of that series about, you know, you're going against a great team like the Oakland A's and the Dodgers really have no chance? I'm paraphrasing Bob here, but, you know, that wasn't a formidable lineup that they had.
Right, but the Giants lineup is formidable, Dan. Okay. They were leading the National League in home runs for most of the season, and I think they finished second, just a couple behind. So they have a very good lineup. They just do it in a slightly different way. Instead of having three Hall of Famers who are going to hit 40 homers in the middle, everyone on the team has hit five or more homers, like 10 guys hit 10 or more homers. And from one through eight in the order, and the order always changes, somebody can hit the ball out of the ballpark. Lamont, Wade, Wilmer, Flores, all these guys who are decent players, but when you put them in the right matchup, they become a really good player for that day. That's the secret of the Giants.
Talking to Tim Kirchen, baseball reporter, and he'll be with Carl Ravitch, part of ESPN's regular Baseball Tonight telecast. Through the remainder of the postseason, the show airs every night at midnight Eastern. ESPN Radio, also the national audio home of the postseason, continuing that coverage all the way through the World Series. What's best for baseball with Shohei Ohtani, his future?
Well, he's got to keep doing what he's doing, and that's going to be really hard to do, to pitch that well.
But
to
where,
play
though,
as
Tim?
Often you, pardon
you,
me?
But where? Do you, it, is,
oh, I see. He should play with the Angels. Mike Trout and he should be the stars that we all want to see. And I don't think it's that far off, but they are going to have to add literally three quality starting pitchers if this is going to happen. And then they're going to have to add two quality relievers if this is going to happen. And they can do that, I believe, with the money they have. I mean, just imagine, Dan, Mike Trout's the best player most of us have ever seen. I saw Willie Mays play, so Mike Trout might be the second best player I've ever seen. But Shohei Ohtani is, no one's ever seen that guy before. Imagine those two guys, the best player you've ever seen and the most remarkable player you've ever seen, taking their team into the playoffs. I think you have to keep those two together and then do whatever it takes to build around them. I'm not sure you can do it, but I just don't think they're that far off from being a playoff team. Baseball is a funny game. You go from real bad to real good, real good to real bad. All of a sudden, I think it can happen with the Angels, but they better get some pitching soon.
But I just wonder how long do you keep Ohtani with dual duties there with pitching and being in the everyday lineup?
Well, as long as you possibly can, because his stuff is tremendous. That split, Dan, is unhittable. His offense, obviously, is his power is ridiculous. He hit eight triples. No one's ever done what he did last year when it comes to pitching, defense, and mostly speed and power. It's just so I would tell him, if you're up for it physically, we want you to do exactly what you did in 2021. And if he can do that again, don't stop it.
I just wonder if he'll be sort of a baseball version of Bo Jackson, where Bo played football, played baseball, probably could have been a Hall of Famer if he committed to one sport. I wonder if Ohtani, could he be a Hall of Famer at both positions if he concentrated on just one of those positions?
I think he would have a chance. And look, I love Bo Jackson. I could tell you hours of Bo Jackson stories, some of the things I saw him do. But Ohtani's a better hitter than Bo Jackson was. And obviously, he's a better pitcher than Bo Jackson was. And yes, if Ohtani said, I just want to hit, I think he could hit a ton of homers, steal a ton of bases, and be a way above average defensive outfielder. I think if he just wanted to pitch, I think he could be a 20-game winner with an ERA under 3. That's how good I think he is. Bo Jackson, by the way, Dan, was the fastest and the strongest guy in the game, I believe, at the same time. Think about that. He could outrun anyone, and he was stronger than anyone. Jimmy Stewart, a scout, once told me a long time ago, he said, I scouted Bo in college. He said, I saw him hit a 500-foot home run, and then he ran out and caught it before it hit the ground, and then he threw it back to home plate in the air. That's how he described the tools of Bo Jackson.
Not that it happened, but, you know.
Not that it happened. Yeah. He was joking.
Yeah, it's still, he's one of those, he's just one of those names that if he had stayed healthy, you just wonder what he would have accomplished in either one of those sports.
Yeah, George Brett used to tell me, he said, I never once missed a Bo Jackson at bat. I never went to the bathroom once during a Bo Jackson at bat because I might miss something that I've never seen before. And I was there that night, Dan. You know that when he ran up the left center field fence in Baltimore, I was covering that game. He looked like a race car going around a ramp turn. You know, a 240-pound man at full speed running up the fence like that. It was fascinating. And every time Harold Reynolds used to tell me, we love Harold Reynolds, of course, every time Bo would get on first in like a double play situation, Harold would yell to him, Bo, this is baseball. It's not football.
Because Harold was going to hang in there at second base if he was turning two or Bo was stealing.
Right. We don't have to do that anymore, Dan. But back then when 240 pounds of metal spikes came at you at 100 miles an hour, that was a bad situation.
All right. How does the postseason end? How does it play out?
Well, I've been wrong so far so badly, but I picked the Dodgers to beat the Rays in the World Series. So I'm going to say stay with it somehow, some way. The Dodgers are going to win game 5. That's taking nothing away from the Giants. The Giants, I just told you, are great. I just think whoever wins that series beats the Braves, even though I just did the Braves series for 4 games. And Freddie Freeman is so good, and their pitching was so great. They dominated the Brewers with their pitching. I just don't think the Braves can beat the Giants or the Dodgers. American League, I think the Astros beat the Red Sox. But if you discount the Red Sox one more time, you're making a mistake. I just think the Astros are better, and I think the Dodgers beat the Astros in the World Series now. That's what I think, but I certainly don't know. And the beauty of this postseason, like everyone is, anyone who thinks he knows it's going to happen is just hasn't been watching baseball for the last 40 years.
You're looking good, Tim.
Dr. Fauci and I look an awful lot alike.
Yep.
He's 80. I was talking to a guy recently. We're going over some old baseball from the 50s or 60s. This was a few years ago. And he goes, oh, you know a lot about baseball. What are you, 70, 75? I was 58 years old. He thought I was 75. It was terrible.
Keep your head up, Tim.
I will.
Thank you, bud.
All right. See you soon.